sound, aside from the suffix conjugation, A-class vowels are very rare in the prefix conjugation, but they're all over the place in nouns. That's just a general observation. You don't need to make that, but the one thing I would get from Walkie O'Connor is the prefix conjugation is older, the suffix conjugation is newer, and the suffix conjugation has a lot of resemblances to the noun. That's something that's that simple. That's all I want is you to give and take Walkie O'Connor and give me an overview, a simplified overview of Walkie O'Connor. Break it down, you know, for example.
Of just verbs in general? Because like I've reading through it and I'm trying to figure out how to simplify, to condense it. Because I have it written down.
I'll find out how you do.
Yeah.
Simplifying, guys, is not an easy thing to do. Yeah, do you realize that's what preaching and teaching is? It's simplifying. It's lying to people. You tell first-year students, this is the rule. You know that's not the rule. You know that when they get in the text, it won't look like that. But if you were to tell them, well, when you get in the text, it's going to look seven different ways, they get terrified. Right? I don't care that much about, you know, I teach you to do nouns. In the parsing, the first thing you do when you're doing a parsing wheel with nouns is get rid of the vowels. Because they change depending on where they are in the sentence, what kind of word you added here. What, you see what I'm trying to say? They change every single time. Well, that frightens students to try to learn all those vowel changes. So you simplify things. And practico doesn't simplify things and terrify students. Siao doesn't simplify it. So what I'm doing is, this is an exercise, and I'm not going to tell you how, but simplify it. Give the basics. What is necessary? If you don't think it's necessary, don't put it down there. If you give somebody a good overall principle on the language, something that would be helpful, a rule that would work in general, put it down.
So then how does it not basically look like what you already have given us?
First of all, I'm asking you to put it in your own form. Second of all, a lot of it will sound like what I've given to you, right? I mean, but what you're doing is you're simplifying it with what paradigms you would put down, how you would list the paradigms. You have choices, for instance, a simple choice. Are you going to put susim, susa, suso, or are you going to put sus, susim, sus, suse? There's a whole huge choice in, are you now presenting the construct state immediately? Or, see what I'm trying to say? Are you presenting masculine versus feminine? Or are you presenting, see what I'm trying to say? Those things will tell me something. Any choice you make, but there's a choice you have to make, because you have two kinds of paradigms, right? I can either emphasize now that in my paradigm, I want you to understand that the endings have gender and number significance. And therefore, I'll include the construct endings because later on we'll talk about why these are different. Or, I can right from the beginning say, here's the construct and here's the absolute and they're different. That's up to you. That's a choice and you've got to think about which choice do you think would be better for the students. Now, you might not have thought of that choice and I just want you to understand that by making you make these choices, I'm making you think through, how did I learn Hebrew and how would I teach Hebrew? What makes sense to me? You're simplifying it by doing that. By going through that exercise, you're doing just what I want. See what I'm saying? And I'm not going to be judging you by the fact that whatever, it's basically, yeah, you got everything in there, you got it complete, and you made an effort at it, you get a good grade. But I want the exercise itself is what will help you to think your way through the language. I find that's much better than me feeling, okay, since I taught it in class, you now know it. It's a tremendous lesson last hour. Students really love it when you, in Psalms class, when you go through a psalm and show them everything about it. This is really, I'm getting good stuff. But then you realize they'd say, oh, we don't know how to do this. It's like, okay, well, that just tells me as a teacher that I should spend less time going through Psalms and showing you what's nice of them, because when you're done, you can't actually do that. So it was, I was really learning some stuff last hour. I was realizing I need to change, I need to make some choices in my teaching technique. Is my class going to be about giving them some good stuff about Psalms, is going to be teaching them the skill of doing Psalms. So I'm learning as I'm going along from some of these things, like, which one do I choose? But last hour was for me, an eye-opener in a lot of ways, some good, some bad, some things I need to do, and some things that I refuse to do. I refuse to dumb down my classes, and I can't do that. There are two teachers in this institution who would rather jump off a cliff than do that, and we may have to. Yeah.
Earlier in the week, there were some questions pertaining to the flowchart. Perhaps it'd be pertinent to address us now.
Okay, guys. You want me to tell you what flowchart I want? I just want a chart that shows students, in your opinion, what the easiest way is to learn verbs. And you have several choices. You can teach them to learn verbs by saying, basically we have prefix conjugation, suffix conjugation, and verbals. Or you can say, let's talk about other kinds of categories. Let's talk about stem. Let's talk, you know what I'm trying to say? Let's do what they typically do, which is let's learn the cal stem and let's learn the d stem, and under the cal stem is prefix and suffix and infinitive. Those are basically the two ways of doing a flowchart. And a flowchart is taking the largest possible categories and breaking them down. This presumes that you've taken my scheme that all Hebrew is based on root and markers. And all of Hebrew is you take the root and then you add things to it to mark it. You can mark it by consonant markers or by vowel markers. That's my scheme of learning Hebrew. Okay? And that this says, okay, well, the prefix conjugate. Basically, I take a root, put something here, take a root, and put something here. Underneath this, what are the forms of the prefix conjugation? You've got simple, what else do you have? What else is based on the prefix conjugation?
This one's married, father.
And, depending on what else you want to say, you might say the imperative. Because the imperative is the prefix conjugation of the prefix. All the volatiles. Under the suffix conjugation, you got simple and you've got
tense narrative.
Future tense narrative. And down here under volatile, you've got indirect volatile. But indirect volatile doesn't matter on this chart, because indirect volatile, you're just simply giving grammar, not syntax. Indirect volatile is syntax. So, and then under verbals, what are your verbals?
Infinitives.
And? Of which there are two and participles. And what are the two infinitives?
Absolute and construct.
Absolute and construct. See what I'm trying to say? That's your basic. If you're looking for a basic flowchart, that's the only kind of thing I'm talking about. In something that you can show the students, and I've never done this, on one page, let me give you a one-page overview of how verbs work. In simplest terms, if you get more specific, you'll scare them to death. But if you can show them a simple flowchart like that, okay? Before that, I would have had a page and said, verbs work just like nouns. They have a root, and they have markers, things that you add to them. The root gives you the basic lexical, dictionary, domain, basic semantic information, and then you add other information to it. Does that make sense? Again, by going through this exercise, it's making you review what you know, and put it down on a piece of paper. Just by doing it, you're doing what I want done on the course, and you're allowing me to feel free to move on to another section of it, which is Dead Sea Scrolls. But I'm not going to be looking, looking at this compared to the rest of the class. Did you do it completely? Did you think your way through it? Did you try to get it in order? You know,
And if you can come up with a diagram or a schematic that works for you, this didn't work for me. You did this, but I would rather see it this way. And do it the way that suits you. Sound good? That's all I'm looking for, yes?
I know that you mentioned that you wanted us to cover the canine chip stone. And I haven't been able to find real good notes on it from my other classes. Could you kind of run over that again real quick?
Okay. If you would... in one section, include what else do I want to put in there? We have certain forms that change, another one would be weak verbs. You don't have to include all of these. Let me just explain what I mean. Knowing something about the history of the language is necessary. So maybe a little section on some notes about the history of the language. All right? One note would be family tree of Semitic languages. East coming before West, because East does not have a suffix conjugation. Alright? I could give you languages that fit each one of these. I don't want to do that today. A lot of grammars would start with a family tree. But the Canaanite shift says that in Northwest Semitic, okay, when we were here long A, many forms in order to mark them were marked with a long A. In Canaan, simple. That every time that you, as the language grows, the younger language makes innovations, makes changes. Okay? So, by the time we get to Northwest Semitic, all the way from here down to here, long A vowel was used to mark certain things. For instance, we'll call this Proto-Semitic, anything that's earlier than our Canaanite. Right? Long A, let me just use QTL. All right? As a basic word. Long I was the participle. That's how you see a participle in Aramaic, that's how you see a participle. In Eblaite, that's how you'll see a participle. In Arabic, that's how you see a participle. In Akkadian, that's what they'll look like. All right? In Canaanite, that long A becomes a long O. And for different reasons, the long I is shown as a tesseract. Right? So what we find is that, and there's a number of places, there are nouns if you see the Arabic word for peace written, you'll see it written with two A's. Salam. Salam alaikum. Blessings be upon you. Peace be upon you. Hebrew, the word is shalom. Words that had a long A vowel naturally, early on, before the formation of Canaanite languages, Canaanite shifted them to O. That's the Canaanite shift. It happened before the Hebrew Bible was written. It happened long. It happened early in all Canaanite languages.
Is there like ball versus bowl? Like
yeah.
Island shift?
Right. Yeah. It is. I mean, it's just a dialect shift. So that's the Canaanite shift. Another principle, segues. We've talked about this. Early on in the history of the language, there were short vowels at the end of every word. What were those short vowels there for? What was the purpose? Anybody remember?
Case endings.
Case endings. Who is nominative? So it was the subject. I is genitive. A is accusative. So far so good? Now, I made a huge point of this to you. Why did I make this huge point last year? There came a point where all short vowels were dropped. What was so huge about that? Anybody remember?
Is that when Moses wrote?
No. It was before Moses wrote, or when Moses wrote. Why did I say that was huge? What makes that significant?
It's hard to see the function of the word in the sentence.
Say that stronger. What would happen, how many of you have taken Greek? What would happen if you dropped all the vowels off the end of Greek verbs and off the final vowels off the end of Greek verbs and Greek nouns? Pardon? It wouldn't be more crazy, it would be impossible. Correct? Could you read Greek without that? Well, that's how earlier Semitic languages were. That's, by the way, how Arabic is. Arabic has case endings. You can, did I think if you know any Arabic? Bismillah. I will not let it go. You don't know that one. Or you shouldn't know that one. Do you know any Arabic phrases at all?
Open sesame.
Pardon?
Open sesame. That's it.
What, As-salam alaykum. No, that doesn't work because kum is to you. Kem, unto you. Pardon?
Yeah. What, do seven cross?
No, that's Aramaic.
All right.
Okay. I'm trying to think of an example. Anyways, for a language to drop final short vowels is like changing the very fundamental of language. Who decides to do that? How do you get people to agree to do that?
Right? How do you get people to agree, we're not going to talk this way anymore? Now, the French do it. The French have an academy that publishes rules once a year on how to keep English out of French. Because they do not want to corrupt their language. Because it's so full of itself. It's impossible to corrupt. Right. So they actually have an academy that goes through and tries to keep Americanisms out of their language. Says, you know, that's the French. Did I tell you about the greatest commercial I ever saw? They actually had a commercial on, they had a show on the 100 best commercials from around the world for the year. They had awards for this. This was the number two that won it. There's a magazine called La Parisienne. Means about things Paris-like. About Paris-like things. It would be like
New Yorker.
The New Yorker. Like that kind of thing. Alright? But it also, if you take this off the end, it means a resident of Paris. And it sounds almost exactly the same. La Parisienne? La Parisienne. It sounds almost exactly the same. Alright? You with me? Because of this, it's feminine. Because of the yen, it's feminine either way. So, in this commercial, you see this typical Frenchman walking up into a house. It's got to be in Paris. Have you ever been, how many have been in Paris? It's just, you know, the houses there, the windows, the way they sit outside, with the grill work, and a little bit of the flowers, and the tall windows, and how you walk up to each of the doors and with the hallways. I mean, Paris is just Paris. It's just the same thing. So you see this guy walking inside, and he gets inside the elevator dressed typically like a Parisian. They, in the wintertime, all wear scarves. Everybody wears a scarf, and they're all knotted the same, and they won't wear a heavy coat, but they'll all wear a big, heavy scarf. So he's standing there, and he's looking at the people next to him, and just it up, you know, lift up the nose kind of thing that the French do, you know, like, oh, you know. And so he's just kind of looking at him. So he gets out onto his floor, beautiful floor, there's like three apartments on the floor. So as he gets off, he looks and realizes he's got something on his feet. Well, in Paris, one of the real problems is dogs and dog whatever on the street. That is a real serious problem in certain places in France. They're just, the English laugh about it. Because the French were known for their fastidiousness, you know, whatever. So he just walks over to the door, you know, in front of each door, right in front of the carpet. They've got a built-in, it's one of these nice apartments, a built-in place for cleaning your feet. So and he just totally wipes his feet on the carpet. Satisfied. Walks over to the next apartment, which is his, and opens up the door and walks inside. And the caption said, it's better to read La Parisienne than to actually meet La Parisienne. And so it was just that kind of thing. It was like, yes, you know it. You've never been to this. It doesn't know how it got there. It's just so perfect. History of the language. All short vowels being dropped must indicate a major, huge, absolute change in their culture, top to bottom, something revolutionary. The fact that this change occurred sometime between 1500 and between 1300 BC just baffles secular scholars. We don't know why the language would have changed then. Because, of course, they can't admit there was an exodus that really occurred, much less that it occurred in that period, which is really funny to study with them. No, we don't go there, but there must have been something pretty enormous. So, what happens? All of a sudden now, you have something that Semitic languages cannot tolerate, a consonant cluster. They cannot tolerate two consonants together. So what they do to adjust for that,
CC is consonant cluster. So to adjust for that, they add an anapteptic vowel, add extra vowel. It's one thing that they drop the final short letter. It's another thing, that final short vowel, that they can't pronounce that. There are certain languages that just can't pronounce certain sounds. The Semitic cannot pronounce that. So they made malk, melek. All right? Then they made it into melek. It was malek, melek. Because what's called vowel harmony. When you've got two vowels that sound a lot alike, they end up being pronounced almost exactly alike. Did not becomes didn't. Didn't with two I's. What does that actually come from? Did not. Did not. Did not, did not. We say didn't, right? Some people say didn't, but didn't is a really strange variety of that. That's vowel harmony at work. So, that's how we get this word, melon. That explains, why do I have an accent on the first syllable? Remember I told you, anytime you see a segol in the second syllable, the accent will be on the first. Anytime you see two segols together, the accent's on the first. Why? Because the basic word, that was the word, malk. The accent was on that syllable. This was just added. You with me so far? But the reason why that's significant and the rule that we learned from that is whenever you add something to the end of the word, malk comes back. That's why you'll have melek. But if you want to say my king is malki. That's my king. Why isn't it Melki? Why is it Malki for my king? See what I'm trying to say? That makes, and by the way, there is never a Dagesh Line in that kaf. Something you'll notice that's called a medial shabab. In all segulates, the final letter is a beged kepet, that will be a medial shabbat. You'll never see a, you would expect of the silent shabbat here, you'd expect that to have a dagish leading. It will not occur. Now, what's important for you to understand is that when you see melek, malki, your students at some point are going to ask, why wasn't it melki? How did that change? Well, what's important for you to, touch my little hair I got up there, it drives me crazy. That what's important is that you know that happened in the prehistory of the language, and this is actually returning to an original form. And I've told you all the time, original forms come back. That is the original form of mare. Susa is a later form. This is the original form. Why? Because when you add something to the end of it, what form do you use? Construct. So the construct is the original form. That's a principle that you're not going to be taught any other place but here. I don't even think they know that in seminaries. They don't think about it linguistically. And what happens, see what I'm trying to say? So they talk, but I want, that's a principle that works across the board. Now, would I explain this to a first-year student? No. But I'd like you to know some of these rules, like Canaanite shift, so that people understand, you know, what I'm looking at is actually something that is an observable phenomena in a great number of words across the language. It happens. Why is this formed here? Whether it's segulates do certain things, whether it's Canaanite shift, there are two different reasons, but you're looking at an observable phenomenon across the language.
Sorry, why does it go from Malik to Malki? Why is the accent just when you add something to the end?
Yes, anytime you add it, anytime you add something to the end of a word, you draw the accent to the end of the word. Every time you add something to the end, you draw the accent. Su-su-sa, su-su-so, su-su-seem, su-su-say. You put something at the end of a word, the accent goes. By the way, you add another word to the end of a word. The second word gets the accent, correct? Two words in construct. You've added a word to the second word, correct? Prepositions. You put a word after them, the preposition loses its accent, and it goes to the next word. All that makes, don't, oh, we didn't lose it, we used it on today. Do you see what I'm saying? So, all I want in your Hebrew Grammar Simplified is for you to have an understanding of the broader ideas that will help your students see things as you explain them. You might choose for a lot of these, I don't know them well enough to whatever. But like I say, give me the ones I said specifically and then add some to that so that you've got just a nice grounded package that you can look at and say, hey, I went through it once. It's like orals for Hebrew grammar. You went through it one time and you know what you know there. That's all I'm looking for. Okay? So you're good. Well, we didn't get to everything, but we covered a bunch.
Quick.
Yeah.
If anyone has any questions, you should tell them what they should do so they don't get anything wrong on their paper.
Like what?
Like if anyone has any questions they don't have answered, they can always come to the office.
Just email me at home. I do not have a phone. My wife has it. She's out in Wisconsin. So just email me if you have a question, and I'd be glad to answer yours.
Does it need to be a model form?
Yes. Remember?
That was right. You told about for a pre-phrase.
Guys, I need this in some kind of form. I need to have a cover page to it. I did ask for a cover page, right?
Yeah, you asked.
Right. Give it to a cover page and give it to me in some form where I can. I don't want to destroy this. If I put it with a bunch of a manila folder, will keep it from, you know what I'm trying to say? It'll keep me from getting the edges all bumped up and whatnot.
So if anyone has any questions between now and the time it's due, come to the office or email him. So if there's anything, there's no excuse not to have everything covered.
Right.
You can always bring a copy of your thing to the office and have us check it and see if it's thorough enough.
Ask me questions. My wife isn't here. I have no wife. So, you know, I'd be glad to take the questions. This is not that big a deal in terms of huge, but it's a nice exercise for putting things together.